Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Paul Rogers, retired Lutheran pastor from Minneapolis, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Doing today. Good to see you. How's your ticker?
That's good. Some verses from the rather famous chapter 3 in the book of Ecclesiastes. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to hate and a time to love, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time for war and a time for peace. Let us pray. O God, whose justice is mercy and whose righteousness is grace, bless the deliberations of these senators, the work of their staff members, and of all of our government offices, and the people of this state. Bless us all with clear discernment, good judgment, and gracious attitudes. As this body of dedicated women and men meets in session or in committee, as journalists interpret and report, as protesters exhibit their sincerity and legitimacy of their causes, as our citizens have conversation over morning coffee or an evening beer, let us all be blessed with your spirit. Help us to acknowledge that this is not the time to break down or tear apart, for hate or for war. Rather, let us be so blessed that all of our attitudes and actions affirm that this is the season to build up, to sow together, the season for peace and love. Amen.
Amen. We'll turn around.
I pledge allegiance to
Yeah. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson Ropes, Fischbach, Phoebe, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Himsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olsen G, Olsen M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Perry, Pogemiller, Bretner Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpt, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is executive and official communications. They are printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is reports of committees. There's one to be read at the desk.
Senator Bach from the Committee on Taxes, to which was referred Senate File 2352, a bill for an act relating to taxation, accelerating the income tax charitable deduction for relief of Haitian earthquake victims, reports the same back with a recommendation that the bill be amended, and when so amended, the bill do pass.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda and the report read by the Secretary be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to amendments.
On the motion,
appointments.
Signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. You make that motion?
Mr. President, I move to lay the committee report relating to appointments on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business, the second reading of Senate bills.
Senate files number 838, 271, 531, 2259, 2309, and 2352.
Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. You have a copy. Today's agenda, there are two changes, three changes. On page 2, Senate File 2579 will be sent to the Judiciary Committee. Page 2, Senate File 2581 to the Finance Committee. And on page 3, Senate File 2590 to the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. There are a number of motions today, author's motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's one resolution, number 146. Without objection, that resolution will be sent to the Rules Committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, the plan would be to go into the committee the whole and take up number 2, and if we had time, number 3. But we did want to be done today in order to allow committees to meet. So we will take up 2 for sure, and only 3 if we have time. Senator Senjum has requested a 10 to 15 minute caucus. So maybe we'll move into the committee of the whole first and then recess, or?
Probably recess first.
Okay. So I'd move, Mr. President, I'd move to recess to the call of the chair, and hopefully that'll be 10 or 15 minutes. Senator Senjum, do you have a room number?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senator Pogemiller and Republican members, room 112. What do you think, about 20 minutes?
10 or 15 minutes?
17 minutes.
17 minutes, all right.
Always compromising.
Okay, the motion,
Mr. President, I'd kind of like to start at an hour.
32 minutes. Okay, on the motion for a brief recess. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President,
Senator Pogemiller,
I'd like to designate number 2 and, if we have time, number 3 on general orders for consideration. Yield to Senator Bonhoff.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 2251 be recommended to pass.
Hey, Senator Bonhoff, explanation of your bill.
Thank you. This bill is the early primary bill. Before we go through the bill, I just wanted to remind members a little bit of some of the history. When we left, last year, we actually in the Senate passed a bill to move the primary from September to June. When that bill went to conference committee, it was amended, and we ended up having an August primary in the final elections bill. The governor did veto the elections bill last session. After that, Senator Rust and Representative Emmer actually went to Professor Jacobs and suggested that Professor Jacobs of the Humphrey Institute convene a group that could spend the interim working on several of the issues that were embedded in that elections bill, the early primary being one of them. The members of the Senate who were involved in that process were Senator Rust, Senator Sieben, who chairs the election subcommittee, myself, and Senator Gerlach. It was decided when that group worked on these election issues that we would actually pull out the early primary and do it as a standalone bill. We did that because there is now some urgency around making that happen. As you can imagine, when you move the primary, that impacts many other things in the elections process. In order to have that happen for this year, we need to give our local election officials plenty of time to get that done in a manner that works for them. I should also add that in this interim group, there were also representatives from both city and county government, as well as from the governor's office. So they did have a chance to work very closely with the legislators to make sure that when we did pass this legislation, it would have all their thinking included in our approach. The MOVE Act was passed by the federal government on October 28th of this past year. The MOVE Act is the Military and Overseas Voters Empowerment Act. And what this act does is it says that there must be a 45-day absentee balloting period before each federal election. This bill complies by, it moves the primary and the filing periods to provide a 46-day absentee balloting period for all regularly scheduled elections, changing the current statute to allow a 46-day absentee balloting period for any special election for federal offices, and it tweaks the language passed in 2008 to make it clear that the state statute allows for the electronic transmission of absentee ballots to the military and overseas voters. We would not have had to make this change in order to comply. We could have asked for a waiver from the federal government, as some of the states have chosen to do. However, we have been advised that those states who are requesting waivers also allow their absentee voters to have their ballots counted after Election Day. We in our working group felt very strongly that that was not a direction we in Minnesota wanted to go. Therefore, this seemed like the most sensible approach. The reason we're having a 46-day absentee balloting period instead of the 45-day period is that the 45th day is always a Saturday, and that is a day that county and city offices are closed. So starting the absentee balloting period 46 days before the election does allow in-person absentee voters to actually vote absentee on the first day of the absentee balloting period. Rather than take you through the entire bill section by section, I thought it would be most useful for our purposes to look at how, in fact, this will affect us in the coming year. So in your packet, members, there is a schedule that goes through the things that are of most interest to the public. I would like at this time to go through some of those dates so that people understand what exactly will be happening. So under this current bill, the precinct caucuses did happen on February 2nd, and that was current law. The deadline for cities and school districts to decide whether or not they're going to have a primary now moves to April 15th, whereas the current law was June 1st. The deadline for changing precinct boundaries is May 1st now. Before was June 1st. The calculation and certification of public funding is now May 11th. The filing period, and of course this affects everyone in this chamber, is May 18th to June 1st, withdrawal period being June 2nd and 3rd. Absentee ballot applications sent to permanent absentee voters will be done June 11th. Campaign signs allowed for the primary will now be June 25th. Absentee balloting period for the primary, June 25th to August 9th. The cutoff for collecting $50 contributions to qualify for public funds is July 19th. So as members might remember, you must have accumulated if you're a state senator, you must have accumulated $3,000 of campaign funds in $50 increments in order to qualify for the public subsidy. That now, the date where you'd need to have done that by is July 19th. The public subsidy agreements are due to the Campaign Finance Board on July 20th. The pre-primary campaign finance reports are due July 26th. The state primary then becomes August 10th. The public subsidy is paid to eligible candidates on August 24th. The absentee balloting period for general election is September 17th to November 1st. And the pre-general campaign financial reports are due October 25th, and our general election is November 2nd. There are specific changes to special elections for federal offices that actually become quite complicated in the bill, but just some general things to understand. Currently, for the U.S. Senate, if there is a vacancy, the governor has the authority to appoint a replacement until the seat can be filled in the special election. The special election is always held in November, whether it's held in the even year or the odd year is dependent on when the vacancy occurs. Under current law, special election occurs in the same year as the vacancy if the vacancy occurs before approximately August 1st in an even year. Otherwise, the special election waits until the following November. This timeline needs to be changed to allow for a 45-day absentee balloting period. In the bill, the special election occurs in the same year as the vacancy if the vacancy occurs before late May. Otherwise, the special election waits until the following November. So there's no longer a distinction between odd and even years. For the House of Representatives, currently, if there's a vacancy, there's a special primary and a special election held using the same time frame to fill vacancies in the legislature. This timeline doesn't allow for a 45-day absentee balloting period, which is now required for both the special primary and the special general election. As such, we need to add a new section of law to address that as well. And I have included a handout in your packet which gives you many, many examples of when the vacancy would happen, when you would need to adjust the timeline. I have also included in your packet the chart on when the other states hold their primaries. I know we always ask, well, where does Minnesota fit into what the other states are doing? So in summary, if we do in fact have an August primary, there would be 32 states that would still hold their primary before Minnesota would hold their primary. We would then join two other states on August 10th, and there would still be 16 that would be after us. That's in contradiction with our current situation in September, where actually 40 states are before us, 10 are the same, and Hawaii is after. So last year when we talked about this effort, we actually went through some of the history on how long we've been talking about changing the primary, and I have included that in your packets as well because Senate Council has provided the history that shows we've been discussing this really since the early 1900s. I think now is the time to do what's right, move this, get it done, particularly in light of the tremendous sacrifice that our military and overseas voters are making. So let's do what's right for everyone, and let's make this happen this year. Thank you. I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2251, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Bonhoff, would you yield for a question?
She will yield.
Yes,
Senator
will.
Limmer.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff, Mr. President. Senator Bonhoff, you know, we live in a world now with electronic communication almost instantaneously. We have commercial delivery systems that can deliver packages within a day or two worldwide, if we wish. And I was told recently that the federal government now recognizes electronic data transfer as a means to pass information as well as voter information and voter results electronically by the federal government. That's already been approved. So in light of these technological advancements, why is it that we're now requesting this 45-day period of time? And I was wondering if you could maybe explain to me what's the logic behind this, despite the fact that electronically we're allowed to use that information
Senator Bonhoff.
And transfer it quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Limmer, last year, 63% of military voters' ballots were not counted in elections. In fact, in Minnesota, it was higher, but 63% were counted, and the remainder were not. And in Minnesota, it was slightly higher, but 25% were not counted. If you look, this change actually allows for electronic transmission of the ballots to the military voters, but in fact, we still do require that the ballots are mailed back. We do that for security reasons, and I don't know about you, but none of us were willing to even have that discussion to make that change. We think that preserving individuals' right to vote is of the utmost importance, but we also want to make sure that there is no fraud in our system, and so it is important. And because of that, we've actually not changed within the confines of this bill whether or not absentee ballot requests can be sent electronically for people within our country. We've only changed it to comply with federal legislation for the overseas military voters. So in summary, Senator Limmer, I think we're really talking about preserving the integrity of our election system. It is important that every vote is counted, but counted only once, and I think you would share that commitment.
Senator, response, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Bonoff, you and I agree that the sanctity of our voting ballot should be of the utmost and protected right of every citizen, whether they're in the military on active duty overseas or whether they're right across the street from where we live. But nevertheless, there's been an effort on behalf of veterans and people that serving overseas that have tried to make voting as instantaneous as possible and that result would actually be counted. It's one of the first bills that I proposed 22 years ago. And the federal government is the one that didn't recognize it. Now, I don't pretend to understand all of the reasons why, and I'm grateful that there's been some consideration for it. But 22 years ago was a little different. We didn't have the worldwide commercial delivery systems that we do now. The security, certainly the internet certainly wasn't around. And so the transfer of ballots, written ballots to overseas personnel in those days was the old-fashioned way of bringing a bundle of paper and then dispersing it to every veteran or overseas military personnel. Our world is considerably different now, and I'm just kind of, the reason I'm asking is that it seems like our technology, our means of delivery have far been improved than those earlier days, and now I'm wondering why every state now has to comply by shifting all of their dates in order to facilitate this when we live in a rather instantaneous world now. And I was wondering if you could maybe expand on that of why the state has to move back. Is every state in the country doing this, or is it some heavy hammer that the federal government has if we don't do it? Are they withholding money on us? What they like to do that a lot in order to comply, make states comply, and I was wondering maybe you could give us a little more information.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer. Well, Senator Limmer, right now there are, as I had said, 32 states that already are before the August primary, and so it's not every state that is affected. But in fact, the federal government has said we must comply with this change, or you could get a waiver. And as I said, we believe that most of the waivers will be given to states that allow absentee voters' ballots that come in after election day to be counted. So in fact, the federal government could take over our elections were we not to comply. I don't think we want to go down that road. It sounds to me like you'd like more exploration done around the ability to return ballots electronically. That's not part of what has been approved with this act, so that's not included in this bill. But I hear your concerns.
Senator Frederickson, Pappas, and Sieben. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman and members, when we're elected to the Senate, we all bring our own life experiences to this body, and I wanted to share with you one of my life experiences and explain to you why I'm going to support this bill. The first election that I could vote in was in 1964, and I'm not sure that my vote was counted in that election. At the time, I was a Navy lieutenant. I was flying a helicopter off one of the world's largest icebreakers, and we were escorting supply ships through the pack ice and around the floes to Thule Air Force Base, which is on the extreme north end of the island of Greenland. Very remote, very severe. I know when I could apply for an absentee ballot. I received the absentee ballot, filled it out right away, and mailed it in the ship's post office. But since I usually was the one that flew the mail off the ship to probably Thule Air Force Base or Sondastrom Air Force Base, I know that that mail did not get off the ship for many days, because we were sometimes stuck in the ice for many days, and we're sometimes weeks away from the next port as we're escorting those ships through the ice. So I really don't know if my ballot back to Brookfield Township, Redwood County, made it to the election board or not. I don't think Goldwater would have won either way, but I would like to think that my ballot was counted. So my point of all this is we have military personnel that serve in some very, very remote areas of the world. And I think those military personnel most surely deserve to have their votes counted. And I think Senator Bonhoeff's bill will see that that happens, and I'm going to support it.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to respond to Senator Limmer's point, too, by reiterating what Senator Bonhoeff already said, which is in the last election, there were 536 ballots from military or overseas voters who were not counted because they weren't received in time. So because, and as you know, since 2008, the Secretary of State's office has been allowed to transmit applications for voter registration or actual ballots via email. So military voters are now able to receive the ballot via email. However, they need to print it off, fill it out, and sign it to transmit it or to give it to get it back to the state by the time of election day. So also because of following up on what Senator Frederickson said, because many of our military members are serving in remote locations and the mail is not always especially reliable in terms of getting back in a timely manner, this just helps broaden the window where there's more time for those ballots to be counted or to be received by the state to be counted on election day. So again, I just want to thank Senator Bonhoeff for her hard work on this and urge members' support.
Further discussion on Senate File 2251, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Bonhoeff, I really apologize that I missed the hearing on this in committee. And I just had a really quick question for you that is a little bit of follow-up what Senator Limmer said, is in this day of technology, why is it that that our military personnel can't vote online on a secure website since we, you know, we use our credit cards, we buy things online, that's a really common thing. Why couldn't we have voting online? And is this just something the federal government just hasn't done yet, is set up the system?
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, it is something that the federal government has not authorized as of yet, and I presume it has to do with authenticating the electronic signature. I would presume that over time that change will happen, but as of yet it has not. Just another follow-up to what Senator Sieben said as well is I have learned that the federal government does not authorize express mail for the absentee ballots also. So not only do these military people have to mail their ballots, they cannot use express mail, further adding to the delay of getting those ballots back.
Further discussion on Senate File 2251. Seeing none, Senator Bonoff renews her motion that when this committee to arise, Senate File 2251 be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair, before we vote, I would just like to thank those who have worked so hard on this effort. I would like to thank Senator Gerlach, Senator Sieben, Senator Rest for the work this during this interim. Thank you.
Secretary, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, we can start Senator Marty's. I'm told it's going to take more than 10 minutes, so why don't we start with the explanation, and then we'll have to lay it over.
Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief and I won't take 10 minutes myself, but just Senate File, I move when this committee to rise, Senate File 1631 be recommended pass.
Okay, Senator Marty, discussion on your motion.
Mr. President, members, this is a bill that would require, would actually not require, this would direct the Board of Medical Practices to not sanction physicians solely for using their own best judgment and their clinical evidence related to the idea of Lyme disease and long-term antibiotic therapy. This is an issue that's still in dispute in the medical community, but there have been a big problem. I think there's many of you have heard from a number of constituents who are struggling with Lyme disease, and they've been, in many cases, successfully treated with long-term antibiotic therapy. This is not something we want to do lightly. But I think that while the science is uncertain yet, it was interesting that one of the doctors who testified against this cited four NIH studies that said that this does not have any improvement on, no impact, positive improvement on it. And we've been talking with that doctor, a researcher from Columbia University who did the NIH study, and he said very definitely he would treat in these situations when you have somebody who's got severe impairment. His only concern is that we shouldn't over-treat. We shouldn't use antibiotics lightly. I'm very concerned about that as well. But they were using his study to say that this, I mean, the doctor who testified there against the bill said that the studies have all shown no improvement. And he explicitly said there's been very definite improvement in many cases in terms of pain and fatigue. And so he said he would recommend treating in cases like that. And this bill simply is, this bill does not, if you've heard from somebody saying this would require insurance companies to cover it, this does not have any insurance mandate, any change. The only thing it's saying is that we put a 5-year sunset on it because we're assuming by that time maybe science will have resolved this more. But in the meantime, we want to make sure that people who are suffering from Lyme disease problems can have the treatment they need. Be happy to stand for questions.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Chair, I urge you to think very carefully about passage of this bill. I think that it is not wise for the legislature to get in the business of practicing medicine, and basically that is what we're doing. What we're doing is saying that the Board of Medical Practice should listen to the legislature based on what are appropriate criteria for treatment of patients. I am passing out several handouts from four infectious disease specialists who are very, very concerned about setting this precedent in the legislature. We have passed legislation in the past. I realize this is different. This legislation just says that no action can be taken against a physician who treats a patient for chronic Lyme disease by using long-term antibiotic therapy. But we have passed legislation that has been not dissimilar in the past that have included treatment for cancer, for ovarian cancer, or rather, uterine cancer, and also for breast cancer, which would include bone marrow transplants. And we have later rescinded both of those processes because they have been proven to be ineffective. I think that we need to listen to the specialists in this area. And those that did testify against the bill said, yes, there are instances where people's chronic Lyme disease does not show up or was not treated effectively in the beginning, and so it appears months later, and it is appropriate to give an extensive course of antibiotic therapy, but to open up the doors for no action at all against a physician for indiscriminately practicing treatment of chronic Lyme disease many, many months later with extensive antibiotic therapy could be sentencing the patient to very, very difficult complications, even death. And there are examples where patients have actually died from extensive antibiotic therapy. I think that it is very, very important for us to listen to the specialists in this area and not get in the business of practicing medicine.
Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, I also rise in opposition to this bill. I don't think it's appropriate for a group of politicians, many without a lot of knowledge of medicine, to start telling the Board of Medicine or any board that deals with health care what they should and shouldn't do. I'm a veterinarian. I wouldn't want you to tell my Board of Veterinary Medicine or Board of Veterinary Practice what they can and can't do. And it's entirely appropriate to rely on those experts that deal with practice and what's appropriate practice in these different fields to let them set the standards and not have us in the Minnesota legislature make those decisions. So I would urge a no vote on this bill.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, just real briefly in response, Senator Dill, we are not asking the legislature to practice medicine here. What we're trying to do is deal with the doctor that Senator Solon talked about. Again, they are saying this is the way you have to treat. The other studies have the other treatment has no impact. I mean, that's what they told the committee. We talked to the researchers who did the NIH studies, and they say it does show an improvement. And we've got letters from physicians who are afraid to treat because they're afraid of sanctions. And I think this is only saying, this is not saying the board has no authority to deal with it. It only says that they cannot punish a doctor for using their best clinical judgment in dealing with a case like this. And I think that this is an unusual situation because of the fact that we've got so many doctors in Minnesota saying they're afraid to practice because they're afraid of the sanctions.
Senator Pretner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would remind members of the legislature that no action has ever been taken against any physician for using their good judgment and providing treatment as they feel is appropriate for a patient that might be suffering from Lyme disease. The concern here is that we have a number of general practitioners, and they are good physicians, but they are not infectious disease physicians or other practitioners where this is not their primary area of specialty, who are treating chronic Lyme disease, which does not even exist yet as a diagnosis and requires further scientific evidence before it would be designated as such. And the fear is that clinics will open up, much as they have for a number of other disorders that have proven later not to be effective, to just shuffle patients through with the treatment of long-term antibiotic therapy. I urge you to be very, very cautious.
Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of Senator Marty's bill. We had quite a long discussion about this bill in committee. And the bottom line is we heard from lots and lots of people who are suffering from Lyme's disease. Many of those people are back home in your districts. I have friends who have been suffering from Lyme's disease for months and months and months. And what this bill does is it does not get into the legislature determining what medical practice is. What this bill does is simply protect doctors from using, to allow them to use their best judgment. We all know the art and science of medical practice is just that. It's an art and a science. Doctors need to be able to make individual decisions about whether long-term antibiotic therapy is appropriate for their patient. And this bill simply allows them to make that decision and use their best professional judgment about what the treatment of patients should be without fearing reprimands from the board. We're at an intersection right now in our understanding with Lyme's disease about we don't have a lot of facts and historic data yet. It's rather new that we're dealing with large numbers of people suffering from Lyme's disease. Doctors need to be able to treat the patients in a way that they see fit with their best professional judgment. And right now, the board is not supporting one mechanism or one pathway for treating this illness. We say all the time, let teachers teach. And in this case, I would say, let doctors do the doctoring that they feel is the best and most appropriate method for their particular patient. We're not outlining and establishing medical practice here. We're simply protecting doctors who want to practice in the way that they think is appropriate for their patient.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did hear a lot of testimony on this in the Health Policy Committee, and I would like to support Senator Prettner Solon's comments that she has made thus far in this discussion. And I would point out that the Infectious Disease Society of America is a non-regulatory agency, non-regulatory group. Jurisdiction, if you will, is a matter of providing guidelines. And during testimony, we heard from a number of individuals who indicated that they felt that long-term antibiotic treatment in their cases was, in fact, helpful. Under further questioning, the Infectious Disease Society of America did agree that, in fact, that there were some cases where patients did experience positive treatment with a course of long-term antibiotic therapy treatment. So I would just encourage members to not support the legislation that's before us today. I think that the Minnesota Medical Association offered testimony that they did not feel a burning desire that physicians in Minnesota were experiencing what we're seeking to correct here. And I think that as the statute stands today, Minnesota physicians have full authority to exercise their professional judgment.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, it sounds like there's more discussion to go ahead on this. I'll request progress.
Progress requested. Progress granted. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. We're under announcements of Senate interest. Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division will meet 15 minutes after the session ends. State Government Budget, 15 minutes after the session ends.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, Family Security meeting will meet in 15 minutes as well.
Senator Senator Sanjo.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 in the caucus conference room.
Ooh. without objection, Senator Cohn will be excused today from 11:40 to the end of session. Senator Pappas from 11 to 11:55. Senator Koch from 12:05 to the end. Senator Rosen from 11 to 12:20. And Senator Saxog all day. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, Senator Senchum, the House is processing the bonding bill today, so what I'd like to do is recess for a skeleton's crew to take their message later today and get the conference committee appointed. If their debate goes on too long, then what we would do is adjourn later this afternoon and then come, we'd have a session tomorrow morning just to process that report. So the hope is that their debate will not take that long, and so, Mr. President, I would like to recess to the call of the chair till later this afternoon to accept the House report on the bonding bill. There will be no votes this afternoon.
The motion is to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor, Senator, before that. Senator Senjum, before that.
Mr. President and Mr. Majority Leader, is there a time that you might have in mind if, for instance, the House was in session at 7 o'clock tonight? Are you still thinking about keeping it open? Or, in other words, is there any kind of a deadline? I'm not suggesting there has to be, but is there one?
Senator Pogermiller.
I think if we could, and I misspoke, we would have to get the conference committee reported, we would have to vote on the, we'd have to declare emergency and vote. Five o'clock, if we could get it done before 5 o'clock, we would do it today. Otherwise, let's wait till tomorrow. And we'll know, I think, a little later today. We'll try to keep people informed. If you watch the House debate, if it looks like they're going to get done, we would come back then to do it.
Yeah, Senator Pogermiller renews his motion to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands in recess.
Order. Senator Pogermiller.
Madam President, the plan is to, the House did not, they're in recess, so they will not have the bill processed till sometime this evening. So I would move that the Senate adjourn till Tuesday, February 18th. No. Tuesday, February 16th, 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, February 16th, 11:30 a.m. And that should be no more than an hour, that session. So.
On the motion to adjourn the Senate, all those in favor? Anybody? Anybody? Thank you. The session, the Senate is adjourned till Tuesday, February 18th. 16th, I'm sorry.